Today's sponsor is Audible, with an unmatched selection of audiobooks, original audio shows, news, comedy, and more. Get a free audiobook with a 30-day trial at audible.com/decode. Hi, I'm Kara Swisher, executive editor of Recode.
And I'm Lauren Good, senior tech editor at The Verge.
And this is Too Embarrassed to Ask, our podcast about consumer tech.
Not just gadgets, but also apps, services, and really anything that has to do with you, the consumer, and all of your embarrassing personal tech questions.
So send us those embarrassing personal tech questions.
Super embarrassing.
Read them all.
Well, I read them all.
I don't read them at all.
No, Kara, can't be bothered.
I can't be bothered.
Every Friday night, I sit home with my cat.
I have a busy life with my friend Kate Hudson or Tom Friedman. I'm like swanning around the world. First, you can tweet them at Recode or to myself or to Lauren with the hashtag too embarrassed. That's two R's and two S's in embarrassed.
We also have an email address, tooembarrassed@recode.net. Again, that's with two R's and two S's.
We have a great back catalog of podcasts too, and you can find them on iTunes at itunes.com/tooembarrassedtoask.
Yes, and normally I would say go back and listen to all the Too Embarrassed to Ask podcasts, which you should. We have a great back catalog. But I'm also going to tell you, the marijuana one, delivery apps for marijuana.
Cannot wait till January 1st.
However, this time I'm going to tell people to go back and listen to Recode Replay, which is our other podcast that has all of the free audio streams of all of your great Code conference interviews.
Yes.
And this week, you had a couple of really good ones last night.
I really did.
Tell us.
I interviewed Kate Hudson, the actress, who is also an entrepreneur with a company called Fabletics. I'm going to give you all the yoga clothes, Lauren. I have them. I'm going to give them all to you. You can go through them.
Aren't
she
you
sent me
again?
A box. I am, but these
now.
Are not Kara Swisher. They're Kate Hudson clothes.
I bet
and your
they
clothes
look
are
fab on you. Yeah, no pun intended. No.
After children, you do not wear Kate Hudson clothes. That's also the way it goes. And it was hard before.
I don't think many of us look like Kate Hudson.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway,
clothes.
So it was interesting about Fabletics. It's an athleisure online brand. That was interesting. And she was fascinating. She was really interesting, actually. And a lot of celebrities are getting involved with online commerce. Tons of them.
Oh, yeah, like the Jenners and Kardashians.
And Reese Witherspoon has something going on. Yeah. Everyone, they all have something going on, all these actresses. It was good. And then interviewed Jennifer Bailey. I did not do that interview, but she's the head of Apple Pay, which was amazing. And had a lovely dinner with her afterwards, had a great talk about where it's going. And the Wish CEO, whose name is escaping me, but he was the Wish CEO.
His name is Peter Szymański.
Right. Anyway.
It's a very difficult name, but one of the interesting things I thought he said was Jason Del Rey, our reporter, asked him about all of the venture capital that he's raised, because he's made hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. But they also seem to spend a lot.
They do.
Despite not having any inventory.
Yeah.
And he said, well, when I go to bed every night, there's $1 billion in the bank.
Oh,
and I feel good about that.
Oh, wow. Yeah, he was an interesting kitty cat. And then Jack Dorsey, who was great. He keeps coming back to Code events, and I whack him on the head, and then he comes back again. And he's so good-natured and thoughtful. I really enjoy interviewing him. And, you know, he's got a lot on his plate. He's got Twitter and Square. We talk mostly about Square, which is his payments company, which he started, and he obviously created Twitter. He's a really fantastic entrepreneur and really visionary in a lot of ways. And, you know, it's nice to have a thoughtful person to talk to. He really does think a lot about what he's doing, the products he's making. And he was great. He talked about, I asked him if he felt responsible for Donald Trump winning the presidency.
Yeah, and he said America is responsible for electing Donald Trump, but he said it's complicated.
Yeah. So I only blame him just a little bit. So it was interesting. It was great. And he talked a lot about Square and where Square Cash is going and payments. It's a really fascinating space. So it was great.
And you can listen to all of those podcasts, once again, on Recode Replay.
Yeah.
That's one of our other
Kate Hudson is my
podcasts.
New best friend. I don't know if you know that.
And oh, really?
Yeah, we're having lunch in LA. It's going to be great.
How are you? Are you ditching our dinner tonight for lunch? For dinner?
No,
with Kate?
No, not at all. No.
I would understand if you did.
No,
to be honest.
Well, I would totally ditch you if you asked me. But
thanks, Kara.
Let's just be clear.
Thanks. Well, this week, when we're not actually talking about Kara's new celebrity best friend.
Yeah, I have a lot of them.
Yeah, she does have a lot of them for the entire podcast. Although in the future, we may just do that. One of these weeks when we're looking for content, we need
Kara's
to make content.
Friends,
we'll just talk about your new best friends.
Yes.
But this week, we're talking about the smart home.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of new smart home gadgets out there right now with companies trying to push them for the holidays. We've been getting a bunch of questions from our two embarrassed loyalists. Smart home is really interesting. I don't have a lot of smart home. I just have the Amazon. No, I don't want Google spying on me with their Nest. I don't want all this stuff.
And you don't think Amazon is?
I don't care if Jeff Bezos is. Like, what does he? What does he care?
That was actually one of the things your best friend Kate Hudson said last night when
you
were asking her about Amazon and the competition, and she said Amazon is this big scary thing, which it is.
So I don't know. I'm not scared of Amazon the way I am about Google.
Well, I
don't have a lot.
I've dabbled in the smart home, we're going to bring on somebody who's dabbled isn't even the right word. We're going to bring on someone who is an expert in the smart home.
Expert.
But before we get to that, We did get one question from a reader that inspired this episode.
We're inspired.
Yes, he inspired this episode. Listener Adam Grieco recently wrote to us and he said, I've been eagerly waiting for Apple's Home app and to use HomeKit with iOS 10, but only to find that all of the home automation products I have, Nest, Wemo, etc., don't work with it. It has been super disappointing. I've been reading about a hack you can use called HomeBridge, but that seems pretty technical.
Yeah.
I wondered if you knew of anyone who would explain an easy way to get the Home app to work or a workaround. He basically says, I just want to be able to set off a trigger and have multiple of my home automation items go on or off. He can also do some of it with Alexa, brings up a great point. You can also do some of this with Alexa, but not all of it. So he's just looking for best practices.
Yeah, it's confusing.
It is.
I like to just put my light up and down with my hand. That's what I do. I want to, let me just tell you a very brief thing before we start. Years ago, a lot of these tech people in Silicon Valley like to outfit their houses with these smart lights and you know, everything.
Didn't Ashton Kutcher do it?
He might have,
smart
wasn't
things
it? Not in his
something.
Home, although I do know him well also.
Of course you do.
But I was in a home and I can't remember who it was the guy who started one of these search companies a long time ago. And it was one of those things.
Did it rhyme with Google?
No. Okay. And you couldn't turn on the friggin' lights. Like, it just, like, I kept, like, hitting things. It was, oh, but you have to push it here. And I remember thinking, you know, there's a thing called a switch that you push up and down, but you could not turn on the lights. And they all had these houses. And when you'd go there, they'd spend so much time fussing. Another guy who was at eBay had a whole house like this. It's crazy making. So
I have a good story around this.
I'd like it to be easy, too. So to answer this question and make it easy for us, we brought on Dan Seifert from The Verge. He oversees Verge's consumer technology reviews and reviews of a lot of smart home gadgets himself, including Google's new Wi-Fi router. We'll get to that later. But first, Dan, you can briefly explain why is it that people can't just buy one smart home platform like Apple or Alexa and have it control all their gadgets. It's needlessly complex.
I agree.
All right, good.
Well, thank you, Kara. I'm on your side.
Now. Thanks, Dan. Thanks for joining
us. Also,
and back to Kara's
friends. Yeah, I'm also kind of like these executives that you refer to, but without the endless budget.
Yeah, I'm not coming to your house.
So now. I'm constantly tinkering with a smart home.
You are not worthy of being Kara's celebrity friend.
Yes.
Explain why it's so frigging complex. Let's start with that.
So the thing is, that's right, that there isn't like one platform that you can rely on to cover everything. And I think part of that is because for the average consumer, smart home technology is very nascent and it's very new and hasn't really been developed yet. And there's a lot of players fighting and kind of vying for it. If you look at the eBay executives of the world, they play on a different level where everything can be custom installed. And that's like a different world. But for the average consumer that's doing this kind of on an average budget, everything is still pretty new and pretty young and still very much in development.
So on the one hand, these DIY kits are supposed to be make this stuff more accessible for people. They're relatively inexpensive. You can buy a hub for a couple hundred dollars, right? You can buy some smart lights. On the other hand, it's complicated.
Yeah.
Correct.
Why?
And well, that's because there's different technologies. There's different, depending on which system you have, maybe some smart lights with it. And
I'm a consumer. I don't care. Like, but what, because there is, will there be a point where there won't be all these technologies that it feels something, it just seems a long time.
It does feel like a long time. I agree. And you know, maybe we'll get there at some point. Today, there isn't one. There is one that I can recommend that covers most of the bases.
Okay.
And if you are looking to start with a smart home today, I would recommend looking at the Samsung SmartThings hub. It is one of the most universal hubs.
Yep.
It's not fully universal. In our reader question here, he was looking to use something with iOS 10's HomeKit, and SmartThings doesn't work with HomeKit. And frankly, not much works with HomeKit.
Right.
And I think that's another whole discussion. But if you're looking for something that you can buy and then not be pigeonholed into very specific accessories to go with it, SmartThings is the way out.
Yeah, so why don't you go over the big players first so people have a sense. So you have SmartThings and we've showed them off at our code events and everything like that. So can you give us sort of a little map of the situation?
Sure. Yeah. So you've got your tech companies like SmartThings. Philips Hue is also a very well-known one. They focus in on smart lights. And then you've got players like Apple HomeKit. Google has dabbled in it and not really done much, but there are products from Google. And then you have products from home improvement stores, which is kind of odd. So Lowe's has its own platform. There's different platforms you can buy at Home Depot. And I think Sears has its own platform, which, you know, promise to make your home more intelligent and do all these things. But I don't know if I would rely on Lowe's to get user experience on a smart home correct.
Right.
Personally, I'd probably lean towards more of a tech company. This is very much a technology product. It works with an app and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I'd probably expect a better result from them.
What about your ISPs? What about companies like AT&T or Comcast or people who are coming in and saying, hey, while you're installing, you know, internet and a phone line and stuff like that, why don't you get this?
Right.
Comcast just did that. So, I mean, they're also trying to vie and grab a piece of this game. And, you know, I kind of view them similar to the Lowe's and Home Depot's of the world. They're going to have a very set agenda, and like they might be able to bill you all at once, and some of them charge subscription fees and stuff like that for their services. But you're probably going to be limited with what pieces will actually work with their platform. And it's going to be a smaller choice than something that is a little more agnostic.
In terms of the speakers that have gotten smarter, who are the big players in that right now?
Yeah, you know, I kind of want to step back a second because, like, speakers is one piece of smart home. Mm-hmm. I think I can kind of group this into a few different ways to help people break it down. You've got smart home technology covers a really broad spectrum. And speakers is one part of it. You've got players like Sonos, and there's a couple other companies that are very similar to Sonos. And
I have
got
a Sonos.
The Amazon Echo and now Google Home, Google Cast-enabled speakers. Then you've got, like, lighting systems that allow you to control your lights either through an app or through a voice-based interface. And then you've got like a bunch of different sensors and switches, and those can be attached to a door. They can turn your open your garage door. They can set your locks. They can do a bunch of various different kind of random things. They can determine whether you've got a water leak or if your thermostat
sensors,
is not working.
Essentially.
Yeah, bunch of different home sensors. And then you've got thermostats and HVAC control. Mm-hmm. And so like all of these things kind of fall under the smart home umbrella.
And then what about like making my coffee and things like that? Like making...
Yeah, I mean, then there's like other like oddball gadgets. Yeah. And some of those kind of fall into the sensors. Some of those can be controlled with basic plugs. So you can... I know Lauren's got some experience setting up a plug that she plugged her coffee maker into to turn it on automatically in the morning and stuff like that.
It wasn't that hard to do. I bought a simple Mr. Coffee, and then I bought a Belkin Wemo switch on Amazon.
Right.
And basically what you're doing is you're making the wall outlet smart.
Oh.
So
right,
you just
need
a device that has a basic on-off function, and then all you're doing is turning the power on and off. And then I hooked it up to Alexa so I could say... But it was so funny because I hooked it up so that I could stand in front of the coffee maker and say... Alexa, turn on the coffee maker. And meanwhile, I was within arm's length of pushing the button to turn on the coffee maker.
I did that this weekend with my Christmas tree.
It's really, really effective. I say, I would like, and it just comes to me. It's astonishing.
But then you have to interact with humans.
No, I don't. I just play with my app and then I leave.
I set up my Christmas tree this weekend. And so I hooked the lights up to a Wemo plug just like you did. And so now I say, Alexa, turn the tree on, and my Christmas tree turns on.
Oh, that's fun. That's fun. Do your kids like that? I bet they like it.
They do.
Yeah.
And then I also set it on a timer, so it comes on at like, you know, middle of the afternoon and goes on, stays on until midnight or something. So
I crawl under the tree and scratch the shit out of myself. I crawl out of
it. Are you a cat?
Yeah, something like that.
Well, I have to say the smart lights,
also
not that thing you described earlier where someone couldn't physically turn the lights on. I've had that happen. I've had a Casita Lutron loaner kit. I didn't buy it because it's very expensive. But I have a loaner kit, and I have it connected to iOS HomeKit. And in an ideal world, you'd be able to like say to your phone on the nightstand, hey, Siri. And then Siri wakes up, and then you say, turn off the bedroom lights. And then your lights turn off. But on the occasion that it doesn't, Siri's not working or it doesn't pick up my voice, whatever it is, then I can't go to the light switch and just turn the damn light switch off.
Right.
It's so frustrating. So I'm literally just lying in bed, and just lying there, being so lazy, shouting, "Siri,
stop shouting, Siri, turning on my phone,
turn my."
This is me every single day.
Oh my god, you people! I'm just drinking.
This is me
quietly
shouting at Google
myself.
Home to turn my bedroom lights off, or shouting at Alexa.
Talk about Wi-Fi extenders. You know what? We just put an arrow into one of our houses where my kids live, and there's Google Wi-Fi. Explain what they do, and I don't even understand. Someone who knows this stuff well did it. When I was not present. So explain the situation.
Sure. So Wi-Fi extenders, routers, mesh systems like Eero and Google Wi-Fi, these are the things that actually power all the smart home gadgets in your home.
Okay.
So if you have a bunch of smart home things in your home, or you want to control your home with smart home technology, they all need to connect to something. And what they're connecting to is your Wi-Fi router. So what we've seen this year is as people have gotten more connected devices in their homes between their phones, their tablets, their laptops, their set-top boxes, and all their smart home gadgets, they've needed better Wi-Fi coverage throughout their home. And so devices like Eero and Google Wi-Fi, and there's a few others on the market as well now, use a technology called mesh networking. And right. essentially what it does is it takes your single router that you might have been using for the past 10 years.
So you got that from Comcast, like the Comcast router.
Yeah, exactly. The one that everyone's familiar with. Mm-hmm. The way to fix it is by unplugging it and plugging it back in,
right,
et cetera.
Right, yes.
It takes that and splits it into multiple units across your house, and they can all communicate with each other and essentially spreads the signal out further.
So why wouldn't you just have an Eero rather than the router itself?
Well, it does. It replaces your router.
So you should get rid of it. Okay.
So an Eero set or a Google Wi-Fi set, they're generally sold in packs of three. Mm-hmm. One of them is plugged into your modem, mm-hmm. which is where your internet signal comes in, and then the others are spread out throughout your house, creating this
which Sonos
mesh blanket
done, right?
of network.
Sonos had done that.
They do. They operate on a mesh network. Yeah,
yeah. Exactly.
But Dan, in your review on TheVerge.com of Google Wi-Fi, you made a good point, which is that your house is a good candidate for this type of product mm-hmm. specifically, but maybe not everybody needs this.
So
explain that a little bit.
The reason my house is a good candidate is multi-part. One, it's an older home. It's an older home and it has a lot of walls. And older construction and a lot of walls present a lot of issues for wireless signal interference. The other thing is that the main living areas, we have a family living room on one side of the house and then the master bedrooms on the other side of the house. Both of those are additions to the original structure, which means that one of their walls, it used to be an exterior wall. So it's thicker and harder for wireless signals to pass through. So when I've used traditional routers, which are based in my home office, which is kind of in the middle of the house, they've had trouble pushing signal out to those far distant rooms. So a mesh network lets me extend the signal out there. The other thing that is probably a little more unique to my situation is the fact that I have literally dozens of devices connected to my home network at all times.
Nerd life.
When I was testing Google Wi-Fi this past weekend, I looked at how many were connected, and it told me 38. And I was that's excessive.
Your neighbors are on there somewhere.
Yeah, well, the thing is, my neighbors aren't that close to me, so it's trust me, it's all of my devices. And so I have a lot of devices that are constantly connecting and disconnecting to the network, which can present a challenge for a traditional router. It's got to route their traffic. It's got to give them addresses and all this other kind of stuff. Mm. So a mesh system just kind of helps spread
mesh
the burden
system.
A lot better.
All right.
But if you have a 750-square-foot single room apartment or something like that, you might not be the best candidate for these type of extenders, unless you're in a dead zone, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, well, it really... The thing with routers is it really, really depends on your situation. It depends on the layout of your home. It depends on the construction of your home. It depends on the neighbors around you. What I've found from talking to a lot of people and speaking to people in the industry is that somebody who's in a very small apartment in an urban environment doesn't have a lot of square footage, obviously, to cover. However, they have a lot of interference from all of their neighbors' wireless mm-hmm. networks. And mm-hmm. a weak router or a typical router, the one that might be given to them by Comcast or whatever, isn't strong enough to give them a reliable signal. And so there's some other companies that are working around that and developing new technologies to mitigate interference. Oh. But mesh networks, like you said, Lauren, are really better if you're trying to cover more square footage and you're having trouble doing that with
router. So how is the smart home doing overall? This is a market we've been hearing about supposedly to explode since the first, Wi-Fi connected light bulbs. And again, I've been seeing this for so long and it still seems, again, as I said, needlessly complex and difficult. And every time I think about doing it, I have a box of smart home stuff in my house. And it sits in the same box. I just don't want to think about
criminal.
It.
Criminal. I'm going to come over and set
okay,
this
you
up
come
for you.
You do okay. that.
Yeah, I think like you said, the smart home economy seems to be as old as the app economy, mm-hmm. and it is taking a long time for this to really propagate and become a thing. There are much more accessibility now than there was maybe 10 years ago. You got things like Nest. You've got things like Philips Hue. You've got products that are in your average Home Depot or hardware store that aren't priced so excessively, so really anybody can play with smart home if they want. I think the future of this and where it's really going to become a thing is when homes are built from the ground
yes,
up
that's
with
what
smart
I mean.
Home in
They've
mind.
Got to, right. Yeah.
And, as long as we're living in 100-year-old houses, there's always going to be kind of like a Band-Aid patch feeling to this where you're forcing it into it.
So
if
are
you're
smart homes
home
being built
like
this?
That,
are they starting to get built like this? Because I haven't
well,
seen those either.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what you want. I think some people certainly, in the Bay Area, there's plenty of people who build their homes ground up for smart home type of technologies. Yeah. What we saw a few years ago was that new homes were starting to be built with networking inside of them. Mm-hmm. So you've got Ethernet ports in every house. It's just a very slow moving
type of thing. It also gets old quickly because I had someone, mm-hmm. this crazy person I had to sit next to at dinner who was into his smart home, and he was going on about how he had cat 26 or whatever, the latest cat, because I had that done in my house when I renovated, and it was the latest at the time, but now it's old. Like someone, they came in and they're like, oh, this is old. I'm like, what are you talking about? It was like just a couple of years ago, and I had to like spend an enormous amount of money to put all this cat, whatever, what's the cat?
Technology.
Cat 4, cat fat, I don't know, but now it's cat 99, and I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, so I'm not going to rip the walls out, and this all those blue wires are sitting in there, probably being eaten by mice. But anyway, it's a really interesting thing. So when will there be a smart home that you don't have to, like, embed it in the walls that can just be pulled off and on? It would be great, like, if it just could change almost continuously, you do an app or something.
Yeah, it'd be great. Or if there was, like, small pieces that you could pop in and out.
Right, of walls, right.
Yeah. I think things like the Amazon Echo Dot, which I know we've talked about in the past on this show, are a step towards that.
Why?
They, you know, provide a very inexpensive way to put smart, literally a voice-controlled computer in every single room of your house. Right. And you can then tell that computer to do things, whether that's turn your lights on or off, or turn the TV on, or make coffee, or whatever it is you set it to do. Those are so cheap now. You can buy like a five-pack for $200 or $250.
Of the dots, bucks. Really?
Of the Yeah, the dots are so
and
cheap.
And
so
the other one is just tall.
Holiday gift.
Yeah, yeah. So you can easily put those in every room of your house where you might want to have that type of service. And so I think that is a huge step forward from where we were a few years ago, where if you wanted voice control in your home to do things like smart home or just, you know, ask the weather or whatever, it would have cost you a fortune. Mm-hmm. And now you can do it very on a shoestring budget very easily and quickly. And so we're going to see, I think we'll need to see more progress towards that. We'll need to see better compatibility across the platforms, which is something we talked about earlier. We'll need to see the economics need to come down a little bit. Our smart lighting kit is still pretty expensive when you think about how much a light bulb costs versus how much a smart light bulb costs. So if you're outfitting your entire house, it's still an expense. So, you know, it's a slow moving thing. It's not like smartphones. It's not like laptops or tablets that seem to be, you know, on a much faster pace of innovation and development.
Mm-hmm. And it's fragmented still. And it's fragmented. And it's everyone wants fragmented. To own the platform.
Fragmented.
Yeah.
All right. So we have a lot of more questions for Dan coming up, including ones about smart home security. But first, we have to go make some money.
This show is brought to you by SoFi. And today I'm talking with John Foley, president of wealth at SoFi, who is here to break down investing. SoFi is a new kind of finance company offering student loan refinancing, mortgages, personal loans, wealth management, and more. Today, I'm asking John a question that some people may be too embarrassed to ask about investments. So what's the easiest way to get started in investing?
Very easy way to get started is if at work, if you have a 401k or some kind of employer-based plan where you can save money, put what you can in there, particularly if your employer matches your contribution. Many employers will have some kind of a match program where the first, I don't know, 2% of your income or something like that, they will match it 50%.
Mm-hmm. Which is free money.
It is free money, and right. You really should take advantage of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Depending on how good your 401k is, you may or may not wish to max that out. You can also go into a program like SoFi Wealth, where you can put as little as $100 a month away, and you pick a portfolio of exchange-traded funds, and we can invest it for you.
See how SoFi can work for you at SOFI.com. Terms and conditions apply at SoFi.com/legal.
This podcast is also sponsored by Indeed Prime. Indeed Prime is a talent platform that matches elite tech talent to top companies. They make it easier for software engineers to find and land their dream job. With their help, you can get immediate exposure to the best tech companies with one simple application. When you're hired, Indeed Prime gives you a $2,000 bonus. That's their way of saying thank you. But if you use our Too Embarrassed to Ask link, you'll get a $5,000 bonus instead, which is more than $2,000, just FYI. So sign up now at Indeed.com/recode. Indeed Prime is 100% free for job candidates and helps hiring managers discover available high-quality talent. Learn more at Indeed.com/recode. Okay, it's time to answer some questions from our loyal listeners and readers at Recode and The Verge.
And again, to send in your questions for future episodes, which Kara will answer directly, mm-hmm, directly. Any time of
come
the night.
To your house. Yeah.
She'll come right to your house with all kinds of smart home gadgets ready to install. Tweet with the hashtag #TooEmbarrassed, or you can just tweet at us directly, or like I said earlier, email us. Okay, so the first question is from Ruare Carol, rcaroltv3 on Twitter, who asks, I have an Echo Dot on my Christmas list. Do I need a smart hub for other connected gadgets, lights, plugs, etc.
The way that you should look at something like the Echo or the Echo Dot is they are not smart home hubs in of themselves.
They are not. They're voices.
They are access points to control your smart home. So to directly answer that question, yes, you do need something else. Some things need a hub. Some things will work directly. There are light bulbs and switches. The Wemo switch that we discussed earlier, the one that I've got turning my Christmas tree on and off, works directly with the Echo. So I don't need a hub for that. However, a hub will give you many more options to things to add. So a SmartThings hub will let you add lights and switches and sensors and all kinds of stuff in the future if you want to expand your smart home capabilities.
And I think if you go into the Amazon app or look up Alexa, you can see a list of devices that are directly compatible with Alexa slash the Echo Dot, right? And then you say, okay, if I buy those lights, then maybe I don't need an extra hub. But if your gadgets aren't listed there, then no.
Yeah, so like Philips Hue is the popular lighting system that requires a hub. But then there's lights from a company called Lifix that don't require a hub. They just work directly.
All right. Okay. All right, next one. I don't understand this one. Yeah, Kurt Myers and whatever HomeKit is.
Do I need a smart hub for him?
Yeah. All right. Now I'm not going to pronounce this name, but it's at AlvinTC. Is the smart home idea really appropriate in an age of devices not secure by design? It's not a priority for manufacturers now. Yes, I am definitely worried about this. For sure.
Yeah, and some third-party firms have done some vulnerability testing, and they're able to hack into stuff.
Rant.
Yeah, there's a lot of concern with this. Recently that whole DNS situation, which took down half of the East Coast, was pinpointed to a smart home gadget.
Yep.
I think a lot of it is... you have to use a little common sense with what you're buying and who you're buying it from and what company makes it. I'm not going to say for sure that every company is secure and safe and stuff like that, but I'm going to be willing to trust a larger company and their products on security than I am just a random thing on Amazon from a company I've never heard of.
And is that because do you think they have the resources to do more vulnerability or security testing or quality testing? Is it because you trust the brand more? I mean, why trust a Google or an Amazon?
They've got the resources. They also have the reason to. A company that doesn't have any brand recognition that's making a product and selling it on Amazon that you've never heard of really doesn't care if you tarnish their brand because they don't have any brand recognition, right? Mm-hmm. So the reason for a company like Philips or like Samsung, which owns SmartThings and the others, to make sure that their product is secure and they are providing a good customer experience is much greater than a random company that's just... you've never heard of.
So what should you be really scared of? What should you be scared of? Listening in, presumably, right? Listening in on your activities.
There's listening in on activities, yeah. We've seen some unsecure smart home. Because these are all connected to your Wi-Fi network. They have Wi-Fi traffic going forth.
Looking in.
Yeah. So Wi-Fi traffic going back and forth to them. You could be concerned about what's called man-in-the-middle attacks, where somebody intercepts that traffic. Or, the device themselves, what we saw with what I believe and what I understand from the DNS problem that happened a few months ago was that hackers were able to turn the smart home devices into kind of like agents to bombard traffic to DNSs.
But that's not personally problematic. That's an overall attack. What about
yourself? An overall attack.
I guess it's looking at inside your home with their video.
Yeah, or like what if you have a Bluetooth lock and someone's able to wirelessly.
What are some of the scary things you should be frightened about?
the scaremongering thing.
Yes, so just watch Black Mirror, okay?
But watch Black Mirror. Yeah. It's all going to happen within the next 5 years. So cameras is a good one. Obviously, if you got a camera inside your home and someone's able to tap into that camera feed, they're looking inside your home. Lauren had a good point with the smart home locks that rely on Bluetooth that could be hacked and opened up. There's one anecdotal thing that I remember someone saying was that they had set up their smart lock to be activated by voice through their Amazon Echo. And you would say, like, Alexa, unlock my front door. They weren't home. Their neighbor had gotten a demo of, like, they showed off this to their neighbor and they were proud of it or whatever. The neighbor came up to the window and said, Alexa, unlock the front door. The front door unlocks because it was quiet in the house and the Echo had heard it.
What? So, was like, the neighbor doing that to just show neighbor. Them, hey, that's okay. You can do this? Or was the neighbor trying to rob them?
My understanding was that the neighbor had to go into the house to get something. It wasn't nefarious, but it was just an example of a way that obviously that's less secure.
I think watching is what most people are nervous about. Like, we'd have to watch Lauren the cat, for example. Like, that would be okay.
Oh, yeah, we could be you can watch me watching Black Mirror on Netflix on Friday
night.
It's not a
new concern either. Yeah. Parents that have been using video baby monitors for years are familiar with this concern as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So it's not a new concern. It's something that whenever you have a wireless video signal, that is something that you want to think about.
I don't have any in my home, unless the CIA put it in, which I'm sure they did.
Probably.
No, I don't have
any. For you, Kara,
yes. You're on the radar.
I am up to some crazy shit in my house, so don't even speak. You'd love to have a camera in there, let me just say. Anyway, so let's get to the next question.
All right, well, the next question was actually about security as well. It came from John Pacheco 7 on Twitter. External smart plugs, could they be physically hacked to get Wi-Fi info? Security. I think we...
Also security.
We already laid out all of the pretty dire possibilities of the smartphone here, but anything specific to external smart plugs, Dan?
Not that I could say specifically. Anything that connects to your Wi-Fi network, if it's not made to specific security standards and not tested and vetted, then it could be susceptible to a man-in-the-middle attack where they intercept the Wi-Fi signal going to it.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's definitely a thing that could happen and has happened.
All right. We have two questions about the same thing, essentially, from Gary Campbell and Joseph Boulevant. What's the best way to begin a smart home, Philips Hue? And the second one, for somebody who's about to move into a new house, what smart home stuff is best to invest in at the very beginning? Same idea.
Yeah, so this is probably the most common question is where do I start with smart homes? And the most common answer that a lot of people will get is that you start with a smart lighting system like Philips Hue or another lighting system, because that gives you an obvious thing right away. You can see what it's doing and you can control it and play with it right away without having to buy any more parts. If you are planning to really go all in and make your home a smart home and beyond the lighting, I would actually suggest starting with a hub and starting with, suggestion in the past, the Samsung SmartThings hub. It actually works with Philips Hue. It works with a bunch of other lighting systems, and it works with a bunch of switches and stuff like that that you might want to get down the line. So that's kind of your starting point. And then from there, you can pick which pieces you want. Do you want a motion detector? Do you want a water sensor? Do you want a smart lighting system? Do you want to get a Sonos system and have music piping throughout your house? All of that kind of like starts with the hub if you're going to build a full smart home. If you just want to like dip your toe in the water, maybe your pinky toe in the water, and just see what this does, what it's like to control lights with your phone or your voice, then a lighting system is great.
I often dip my pinky toe into water.
I'm not making fun.
No, I love Dan. I love working with Dan. Okay, the next question is from Dathan Nrake. I don't know if this has to do with the smart home. He says, indoor heating isn't working and the temperature in my bedroom is 0 degrees Celsius. Help, capital letters.
No, we didn't help them. Oh, well.
Nathan,
0 degrees, he's frozen by now.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'm really sorry for your woes.
Loss. Your death.
I hope you have some blankets.
It's an interesting point. Nick Bilton, when he was at the Times, wrote an article maybe a year ago or so. He had an experience with his Nest thermostat that Nest was having server issues and some of the thermostats stopped working.
Oh.
And his heat turned off in the middle of the night and he woke up to a chilly house in the morning.
A small chill.
So it can be a concern. It can be a thing, a problem. Your thermostat is connected and if your network goes down,
it doesn't just work
if
it goes down. It doesn't just work.
In theory, it should.
Right, yeah.
And sometimes it does. Most of the times it does.
And also,
but Nest was having a problem and some of the thermostats stopped working. Mm-hmm. And,
that's exactly why we're headed
off,
for doom.
So.
We're hurtling towards
doom.
Well,
also, this person did not specify whether or not the heating system or the gauge that he's using is actually Wi-Fi connected.
I think this person needs to call somebody and have them look at their HVAC.
I think he does, because you know what, Nathan, if you're paying your utilities bill, you should get
0 degrees centigrade. It's cold.
That's cold.
The last one is from Daniel Smith at Java Joint. I don't want a smart home. I want a secure one. Well, you can't have either.
Yeah.
You can't.
So, Dan,
well,
very
sure
quickly,
you can disconnect the cable connection.
Yep.
You can disconnect all cables. You can go completely off the grid.
You can
and
put
then,
a wall.
Like, I don't know,
go live in Walden Pond.
Steel walls. In your...
Steel walls.
Yes.
And even
go
then.
Live in the woods.
Even
go
then,
live in a
if
Faraday
you have a
cage.
Panic room,
even
it
then,
doesn't matter.
All the drones overhead are mapping you. But no, in all seriousness, Dan, can you talk quickly about... So one of the things that people have written about when it comes to something like Apple iOS HomeKit is the fact that it took a really long time for products that actually worked with the platform to start rolling out. Apple announced it a couple of years ago. Now there's just, you know, a few products, maybe I may be underestimating that you can actually use at work with it. And part of the reason is that Apple was trying to make things more secure, right? And they were requiring hardware makers to use a special chip. Is there anything more secure about any of these platforms that we know of, like definitively, than the others?
It's a great question. Definitively, off the top of my head, I can't say for sure that one is more secure than the other. Mm-hmm. I think this goes back to a lot of our discussion earlier about trust and what reliance and what company you want to put your trust in. Apple definitely has a long history of prioritizing privacy and security and has done a very good job with that so far with its other lines of products. And if that's the reason that HomeKit has had a slower rollout than others, I wouldn't say that's terribly a bad thing. It's just a little bit frustrating if you have an iPhone, you have iOS 10, you know the Home app is there, and you had bought some products in the past, and it would seem like they would work obviously with the HomeKit app, and they don't, and the whole thing is kind of useless to you. Mm-hmm. That's definitely a frustrating thing that I can relate to.
Yeah. Siri, turn my bedroom lights off. Siri, turn the damn lights
get
off.
Up and
I
turn
want
off
to go
your lights.
To bed, Siri.
Reach over. You know, I fall asleep with the lights on sometimes.
I tell you a horror story? Or not? It's not a horror story. It's an annoyance. So in my bedroom, I have four set-in lights in that are all they're GE Link bulbs, and they connect to through the Philips Hue and the Samsung Smart thing. Oh, so I can control those with Google Home or Amazon's Echo. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, of the four lights, maybe one or two decides they don't want to see the network.
What?
So I'll ask to turn the bedroom lights off, and they'll be
and
like,
one
we'll turn
on?
Three of them off, and one will just stay on.
Maybe it's mood lighting.
Yes. You know,
maybe
dig out an app.
I have a solution for you. It's called the clapper, and I still have one. I still have a clapper, and it works perfectly.
The clapper was the original.
You know what?
Smart light.
I still have it. It still works. I love the clapper.
Let's do it all together now. Let's do it all together. Clap on, clap off the clapper.
Well, I think that speaks to the fact that this is still a very
the clapper works. Seriously, yeah. Better than all this other. It's amazing.
The experience that I have is that it talks to how new and still early adopter this is. And if you do want to set up a smart home and get smart technology, it's a lot of fun. Yeah. And you can tinker with it if you're a tinkerer type of person. And you can definitely get it set up and working, but you will have headaches along the way.
Yes,
there's
indeed.
No ifs, ands,
even
or
if you're really good at technology.
Even if you're really good
you
at
know,
it. And the thing that most people, I think, forget to consider is the other people in their home.
Right.
Mm-hmm. My poor wife is often a victim of this.
I feel bad.
Wonders why
she's
the one
that wrote
light
about
switch.
The temperature. She's real cold. You need to get home and get her.
Yeah.
Get that work.
And so, like, you know, there's certain considerations that you should probably take into account.
Yeah,
if you
I think so.
My significant other ripped the Belkin switch out of the wall that was attached to the coffee right. maker. He was like, this is useless. And I was like, I was getting into this. I was tinkering with, I was going to have a smart coffee. And now the Belkin switch just sits there on the counter. I'm going to come up with another
so
good
our conclusion
hack for smart coffee.
The clapper.
I'm gonna clapper.
I know,
but now it sounds like I don't know, like the clapper is something you definitely don't want to get. Like,
genius.
Well, how secure is the clapper, right? Somebody could just walk by your window
and clap.
You could have friends over.
What encryption is on your claps? Like, is that 256-bit?
Oh, Dan, that was a good one. We're going to end on that one. This has been another great episode of... Even Erica can't stop laughing over there. This has been another great episode of Too Embarrassed to Ask.
Does Kate Hudson have a smart home?
I don't know
your new
yet,
best friend?
I will soon when I visit her in Los Angeles. I'll let you know. I doubt it. She doesn't need one. She has assistants turning everything on and off, for goodness sake. Or she just floats around like in her Stevie Nicks way.
She claps her hands and assistants.
No, it just goes off as she walks by.
She's like, your aura. It's purple.
Right, exactly. All right, this has been another great episode of Too Embarrassed to Ask. Dan, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
And if you enjoyed the episode as much as we did, be sure to subscribe to the show, and you can leave us a review at itunes.com/tooembarrassedtoask. Make sure that you write in the review how much you like it when Kara talks about cats, because she loves her cats.
I really don't. and subscribing is great. You'll be the first to listen to new episodes every Friday or catch up on previous episodes where we answer all of the tech questions that our listeners have been too embarrassed to ask. Ask.
That's itunes.com/tooembarrassedtoask, or you can also subscribe on Google Play Music, TuneIn, or Stitcher, or just go to the website, go to recode.net/podcast, and you can listen to every single episode there.
And while you're there, you can check out our other podcasts like Recode Decode, Recode Replay, and Recode Media with Peter Kafka.
The Verge also has some great podcasts for your listening pleasure. Walt Mossberg and Eli Patel host Control Walt Elite, and Neil I also usually hosts The Vergecast.
Don't forget to tweet your questions ahead of time to @recode with the hashtag tooembarrassed, or email them to tooembarrassed@recode.net.
And Kara will respond right away.
Immediately. I'll clap off. Anyway.
Thank you for listening. And also thank you again to our sponsors, Audible, SoFi, and Indeed Prime. Thanks also to Digital Media, the company that distributes the show. We'll be back next week to answer more of the tech questions that you have been too embarrassed to ask, and we'll get you answers. So tune in then.